This episode is brought to you by Thorn, and I have some incredible news for any of you that are in the military, first responder, or medical professions. In an effort to give back, Thorn is now offering you an ongoing 25% off each and every one of your purchases of their incredible nutritional solutions. Now, Thorn is the official supplement of CrossFit, the UFC, the Mayo Clinic, the Human Performance Project, and multiple special operations organizations. I myself have used them for several years, and that is why I brought them on as a sponsor. Some of my favorite products they have are their Multivitamin Elite, their Whey Protein, the Super EPA, and then most recently, Cinequil. As a firefighter, a stuntman, and a martial artist, I've had my share of brain trauma and sleep deprivation, and Cinequil is their latest brain health supplement. Now, to qualify for the 35% off, go to thorn.com, thorne.com. Click on sign in and then create a new account. You will see the opportunity to register as a first responder or member of military. When you click on that, it will take you through verification with GovX. You'll simply choose a profession, provide one piece of documentation, and then you are verified for life. From that point onwards, you will continue to receive 35% off through Thorn. Now, for those of you who don't qualify, there is still the 10% off using the code BTS10, behind the shield 10, for a one-time purchase. Now, to learn more about Thorn, go to episode 323 of the Behind the Shield podcast with Joel Totoro and Wes Barnett. I'm extremely excited to announce a brand new sponsor for the Behind the Shield podcast, and that is Rescue One CBD. For any of you who have listened to this podcast for the last 8 years, you would have heard my own personal journey from using prescription pills after a knee surgery to finding CBD and having incredible success with that. Now, I'm sure everyone listening is fully aware that we have an epidemic when it comes to the use of nicotine pouches, dip, and other products. Now, to combat this, John from Rescue One has developed a nicotine-free pouch called the Rip Pouch. It's the first and only pouch that contains CBG, nootropics, and B vitamins for both energy and mental clarity. And as with all of their products, is tested to ensure it is 0.000% THC free. So completely trusted for anyone in uniform. And they always send a drug test with their products just to give you guys peace of mind. Now, the pre-sale for this incredible product has just begun and goes on till October 1st. So if you go to rescue1cbd.com, you can register for the pre-sale and make sure it ships the moment it is available. Now, on top of all that, Rescue One is offering you, the listener of the Behind the Shield podcast, 15% off your order if you use the code BTS, as in Behind the Shield. And you can find all of their products, you can find all of the testing and understand why this truly is a product that you can trust by going to rescue1cbd.com. And you can listen to my conversation with John on episode 1011 of the Behind the Shield podcast. Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name is James Gearing, and this week I am so excited to bring back on for the sixth time strength and conditioning coach and the man behind StrongFit, Julien Pinot. Now, for those of you who have heard Julien's episode in the past, you will see this metamorphosis from strength training to everything from trauma release, nutrition, accessory work, and for lack of a better word, uneffing CrossFitters. Well, in this conversation, we circle around having last spoke during COVID and reflect on so many elements that need to be discussed, from the destruction of the strength and conditioning industry during that period, how removing these positive places of community and health negatively impacted the athletes, the cancer of extremist wokeism, the lack of ownership and responsibility of mistakes made during COVID, and so much more. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single 5-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of well over 1,100 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I welcome back on the show, Julien Pinault. Enjoy. Well, Julien, I want to start by saying thank you so much for coming back on the Behind the Shield podcast for the sixth time now.
My pleasure. My pleasure. I can't believe it's been six times, but right. Yeah.
On my Facebook memories a few days ago, it came up the picture when I actually came to visit you and you trained with me that one time in California. And that was probably, what was that, nine years ago now?
I don't know because I don't have access to Facebook because I got banned permanently years back.
Well, there's an icebreaker. Let's talk about that. I got my Instagram page shut down because I was posting kindness and compassion videos. So complete about no men, warning.
It was too much about men. Yeah, that sounds about
right. So yeah, talk to me about that. Let's open the door. We have social media platforms that are basically allowing porn, you know, on the normal social media. We have the super violent stuff, the horrible accidents that are on there. So talk to me about your perspective on why people that seem to be trying to make the world better seem to be the most canceled and restricted groups of the whole social media spectrum.
Yeah, but I wish it was evil. And the banality of it, I think, is truly what scares me the most. Because I see the same thing, a bit the evolution of the fitness industry, right? Where you had the Greg Glassman, the Dave Castro, the people like that into, and now we're back to bodybuilding and biohackers. And now that the fitness industry run through YouTube, you're going to see more and more of that and less of that. And what sells the most is obviously half naked ladies. And so that's where Instagram basically is going. So now I'm sure at some point they're going to try to compete with OnlyFans. So you're going to have girls with subscriptions on Instagram more and more where they can have their, you know, whatever they call that, their Uber contact, the stuff you don't see normally, and then the text messages and stuff. But honestly, this follows the same trend. Like we lost the culture war like about 10 years ago. I will still blame Me Too to start the whole avalanche toward that thing. Because what you have now is just a bunch of upper middle class, college educated, like elitists on the feminine side, men and women, by the way, that won the culture war through pressure that are telling us what to do. And they live in a bubble that is so thick that they can't imagine for a second that their worldview is not the correct one. But the problem is they make all the decisions. And so at Instagram, at Facebook, but I think we're gonna see in the fitness industry what we saw in Hollywood. So what happened to Hollywood also, this is how come it's at the hand of a bunch of Google Sheet, you know, college educated people that do not care about movies. Well, because that's not who finance movies anymore. If you see Disney, for example, Disney does not make money on movies. It makes money on theme parks and merchandising. It never cared about it. They never needed to make money on movies. So therefore, who do you think was in charge? It's just Google Sheet people, really good at finance and pushing numbers and there. Then you get Apple, same problem. Then you get Netflix, which is about volume, not movies. Then you get Amazon, same thing. So suddenly, instead of having producers that are responsible to the public, you have producers that are responsible to people that do not care about movies, that only care about their bottom line. And those people make the decisions. And so you take that within a bubble and a cultural war and you push it forward and you end up with people that are just horrible at what they do. And so after that, it's the bubble they live in and making sure they look good with their friends. And they go, look who I banned. We don't have those people on my platform. And then you get that basically, you know, cultural war going into the stop. So people like us are the first one to go. But don't worry, he's coming to you as well. That's the thing with identity politics, is sooner or later, it'll be you. Absolutely. It starts with us, older white men, but don't worry. Sooner or later, they'll be at your doorstep and you will be the undesirable. And since it's a Google Sheet, they'll press that button on you just like they did on us. Me, I got banned because I dare talk about the Wuhan virus. Like that maybe came from a lab. And back then you could not say that, so got banned permanently. And then I got shadow banned on YouTube as well, and then the whole thing. But so men's values are not exactly hip right now, right? Because we're going back to upper middle class, you know, very feminine and everything. Like people like us are the problem, and so therefore. But I don't think there's, unfortunately, I wish there was an evil there, because it would be a lot easier to fight. I just think there's just an apathy and a lack of care, and men can suffer, who cares, because honestly, it doesn't create a ripple. It never did. Men are expendable, always will be. That's okay. That's our role. That's all as well. Okay, so always will be the case. And so to those people, they're like, what difference does it make? Yep. It's the apathy of it that scares me the most.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think where I've seen it so blatant recently is, and I talk about this all the time, and I was talking about it, and then I got shut down on Instagram. May be a correlation there, but, you know, because I talked about, you know, the vaccine mandates and how it was wrong with, you know, everyone that was holding the line. And then, you know, most recently is with Gaza. It's not taking a side. It's like, okay, you guys have been at each other's throats. There's, you know, it's very similar to the UK and Northern Ireland that I grew up with.
Religious war.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then you have this massive overreaction. And, you know, right at the very beginning, the people that I surround myself with were like, well, time out. This is not a reaction to one thing. This is, you know, like I said, this is watching someone get punched in the face and then the other person beating them to death. There's a certain point where it's not a retaliation anymore. And to have an apathetic nation, the tens of thousands of children are being slaughtered. No child can be a member of Hamas. No infant, you know, the paramedics, the firefighters, the doctors, the nurses, they're all just trying to live their life, or even, you know, the people at the front line are trying to rescue lives and save lives and preserve lives, and they're being slaughtered. The apathy and the lack of courage to stand up and say, that is wrong. Yeah, it doesn't make you an anti-Semite, you know what I mean? But to just have the courage to say that is wrong, the fact that this nation won't do that, that's absolutely terrifying.
Okay, but this nation also did not say anything while we are sterilizing 10,000 kids. It's still happening today, I'm sorry, but like, so the trans movement is losing because of women's sports, but not because we're sterilizing kids. Mm-hmm. What does that tell you as to where we are? Isn't that insane? That the trans movement is losing because of women's sports. Because now women are like, well, that's not fair. But transitioning kids at 8 with cancer drugs that we know the consequences of that. We know the sterilization with the pre-hormone block. We know all this. That didn't move the needle. But women's sports do.
Yeah.
So you know what I mean? Like, then do you think, really think Gaza is going to move that?
No, I think it is now. It is now, but that's after, you know, 60 plus thousand dead, of which 20,000 were children. People are now going, oh, but I don't think it's because it's coming from a place of courage and compassion.
No.
It's coming a place of, oh, shit, other people are talking about it now. Let's talk about that so we don't seem like we're the bad guys.
So far into it. They went so far past what is, like, look, if they had cut that at half, people would have been like, oh yeah, they went a bit too far. But like at some point, you have to go like, look, it's been too long. Like, come on, people, like, hello. But yeah, but at the same time, like, I'm still surprised it lasted that long, because now you're being called an anti-Semite. And the anti-DEI people now are pro-DEI when it comes to Israel. So we're gonna end up in the same place we always do. Like that culture war we lost a while ago. I think it's Jordan Peterson who was saying that the woke world, we had to understand, was first a war of competence, on competence. And honestly, that's what I see. I just see of, we get rid of competent people, that's what you get. For example, why do you get Gaza? Because Biden was half asleep the entire time. No one is truly in charge. Then you let Netanyahu in charge and he does what he always wanted, which is to get rid of them anyway. And so now they just, you know, like they don't, that's what, how evil moves. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It's just, you let it slide and then you just, and then you get a stupid situation like a Biden who's not capable of running a country like the US. And 4 years later, you wake up and you go, what just happened? But look at what COVID did. How many people did COVID kill? Like how many suicide, how many alcoholism, how many kids abused, women abused, men abused, like, and we're never going to tally it up and we still don't talk about it.
Well, let's get
which
to
is
that.
Insane to me.
Yeah.
That is insane to me that we are talking about Epstein, as we should, but not about the COVID files. That is nuts to me. 3 years, shut down the world. Like, buddy, how many poor people starved because of this? Because we have the number, right? Like, and we're not talking about that. That to me is just mind-boggling. That's why, like, the guys I stop, honestly, it surprises me they talk about it as much as they do.
Well, when we sat down, it was February 2022. So in Florida here, we had already kind of gone back to normal by that point. But, you know, there were many other places around the country and the world that still weren't. And, you know, I think you and I revisited all of the people that I had on the show that could give actionable information to people in their homes, whether it was nutritionists, mental health, you know, strength and conditioning, because the only truth, in my opinion, in COVID was the healthier the nation, the higher chance of survival, period.
Yeah, you know?
100%. So 100%. Let's revisit it now in 2025, because I couldn't agree with you more. The back end of this in America, you know, we have 70% of the population that's obese or overweight. You know, we have smoking, we have all these other things. You know, if they really were worried about the health of the nation, we would have seen local farmers, you know, subsidized to grow organic food. We would have seen PE programs put back in school, real food cooked in school, you know, all these different initiatives to make the country better. But like you said, the moment this thing kind of finally concluded, there was not a single mention of, you know, what have we learned and then what can we do to prevent the next one? So I have my opinion, so I'm going to give you the mic. Talk to me about, you know, from February 2022 onwards and your reflection of this.
Right. So actually, I have an interesting view on this because of what happened. So when I'm talking to you, I'm in Amsterdam, right? And we have the lockdowns, 9 o'clock till like 6 or 8 in the morning, where you can't be on the streets, the whole stuff. Liquor stores are open in the US, remember, but not the gyms. So they closed the gym. They didn't even let you train at the park anymore. You couldn't even go to the park to train outside by yourself. Even that, they started closing down. It was insane. And even during the day, you couldn't have group classes. Like, the shutdown was the most insane thing that we know for now is complete bullshit, which is what we said at the time. So I moved to Brazil. Right, so turn out the pandemic in Brazil lasted 3 weeks. And everybody went like, no, you know, type of things, like we're not doing that again. So you know what's the most interesting thing in that is, if COVID had been what he said it was and as dangerous as they said it was, the favelas would have been overrun with bodies, because those are places that are, you know, on top of each other, hygiene, everybody's living like this. And you have no access to certain parts of it. So the bodies would have been piling up on the streets. And you know what we saw? Nothing. But the difference is Brazil, everybody is fairly fit, right? By the way, they don't eat that well. They love sweets. They don't eat that well. It's mostly rice and beans, but they are active people. They're much stronger. They're much younger, stuff like that. So at first you saw the wave of, you know, like older people, basically the weaker part of the population, they got hit, unfortunately, like everywhere else, right? Then a lot of the death got attributed to COVID, even though it wasn't that. But after that, it died down and people, no one talked about Brazil at it because the numbers were fairly low. And I can tell you, I don't care what the numbers are because it's a huge country. We saw it in the favelas. There was no bodies in the favela overrunning the streets like it should have been. Neither did it in Africa, like you would expect. If you have a true pandemic, places like the favelas and everything would be, as you can imagine, you know what I mean? You would have bodies everywhere because you can't get them out, like all that stuff. You had none of that. Why? Because Brazil is a healthier country. People have better habits. They don't eat the best, but at least they move. They're not as fat. They're not as big. They don't have diabetes. That's what it came down to. And so there was one pandemic, 3 weeks, everybody went back to work. This affected mostly rich countries, rich people, rich, like, so the only places where the pandemic lasted a bit longer in Brazil were the places where they had more money because they followed the US. The US sneezes, the rest of the world catches a cold, as usual, right? So yeah. That's why the pandemic lasted as long as it did, because, but by the way, here we had a vaccine mandate for a bunch of stuff that most people didn't follow or got fake ones, because this is Brazil. And I came to the US, I had to do the vaccine. I could not find a doctor that would do a fake one, unfortunately, so I had to get the real one. But that was the only way for me to travel. We're not even talking about that. You know, that bullshit vaccine that was supposed to keep us from contaminating others or us. Yeah, so that was a lie too, eh? How interesting. And then we're not talking about that anymore. And Fauci is still not in jail. How interesting.
I had to take the vaccine to travel as well. And this is the thing with, you know, with the conversation at the time, you know, for me, that was a choice. Yeah. I volunteered to have it because, you know, of the mandates, you know, when I was traveling. And then I was going to visit my grandmother, who was almost 105. So
my point,
you know, so I'm like, well, I'm going to reduce
I
any
chance to take the vaccine so I could feed my family. That's true. I had that choice.
Exactly. But to force it on the very people that had no vaccine, no PPE, you know, were not in their homes, were worried about bringing this disease back to their family early on when they thought, you know, it was going to kill everyone. No one had a problem with those people being on the front line then. And then there's a 180. And now if they don't take the vaccine, they're literally terminated. And I spoke to someone, I think it was, where are we now? I think it was the end of last year. So end of 2024. And I think he had just been terminated then. And they're still to this day now trying to take jobs from California and first responders. So this is the conversation we need to be having because, like you said, the efficacy ultimately is 50-50, which is no different than a placebo or anything else, you know? So it was never, ever the vaccine that people said it was going to be. Like, you know, if you take it, you stop the spread. I don't think people had a problem as much if that was the case, but they were lied to.
Even Fauci said that was bullshit. That was not science made. You just made it up. Right. That closed all gyms, basically, right? That's how we based the restaurants, gyms, places of the church, places of worship. Not for whatever reason, not for booze, like go figure. Like liquor store, they were not affected. But every single place like gyms that I'm missing closed because of that 6 foot rule. So it's those are the decisions that sank all of us, our businesses, our industry, everything. Like I lost 90% of my business, but at least I still had a business. The reason I lost 90% of my business is because all my friends and coaches lost their business, 100%. Mm-hmm. I didn't have coaches anymore because there was no gyms. That's insane. And you realize it was that 6 foot was bullshit, the mask was bullshit, the vaccine was a lie, and we're not going to talk about it? Where is my whoops? You destroyed my industry. I spent my entire life building the stuff. I've helped people hire, like, you know what I mean? I do good work for society. That was the deal. I'm a good boy. I pay my taxes. I help people, right? I try to help society. The deal was you let me do that. And you're just going to wipe that out, wipe out my entire industry, and I don't even get whoops. Forget sorry. I don't even get whoops. Maybe, no, not even that. We're just not going to talk about it. Wiped out, 10 years. I mean, lifetime, but you know what I mean? 10 years of actual work, gym gone. And, sucks to be you. And that's the society you guys want us to go to. The problem is, and it's a microcosm, you see that with CrossFit, but it's everywhere, is, you know, like CJ Martin from Invictus?
Yes.
Right? He was about to become a partner in a major law firm in San Diego at that time, right? He's very, very smart and he would have done very well. And instead of that, he chooses CrossFit and the fitness world because he wants to help people. Right. Do you think a CJ Martin makes the same choice today?
No.
After what we just showed, like how we treat that, no. So this is who we're going to lose, competent people, the good ones. What do you think happens in 5 years, 10 years when you have just incompetent coaches running global gyms and the biohackers come in? They're just going to sell you, peptides and all that shit instead of having people that truly care and try to further the world of fitness. Greg Glassman, as imperfect as a man as he was, has helped more women in the fitness industry than anybody else combined. He's changed the way we train women. I mean, those people will not be there anymore. Who do you think we're going to get? We're going to get the Google Sheet people from Disney. And then they're going to come in and they're going to have their DEI and they're going to want to put black women everywhere and everything. But at the end, the rate of diabetes will go up and people will be less fit. And then. This is how you get rid of entire industries. Is just get rid of the good ones at the top. You know that it's called what? Price's Law of Economics. That in on a project, 50% of the work is being done by the square root of the people assigned to the project. Have you ever heard that law?
I have. No. Economic? Nope.
Right. So 50% of the work is done by the square root of people assigned to a project. That means that you have 100%, 10 people do 50% of the work. So also tells you 10 people, 3 people do half the work. That's about right. 100 people, 10 people do half the work. So the bigger the project, the more waste you get, which is an interesting, anyway. So, but you know how you get rid of you get to a big project, you get rid of those 10. Now you get 90% of people doing 50%. But those 10 people were the one that matters. It's not that hard to get rid of those. It's hard to keep them, but it's very easy to not have them around. And now you get 90% and that basically with 50% of that. Now you got 9 people doing 50% of the, and then, you know what I mean? And then you keep going on like that. And before you know it, you end up with a society that is profoundly incompetent, and everybody's going to wonder why shit starts to break down everywhere. That's because you got rid of those 10 people that were doing half the work. That's why.
That's really interesting.
But you got 90 left, so it doesn't matter, right?
It's interesting because that mirrors what we're going through in the first responder professions at the moment. When it was very competitive, and it's not that they've been really well supported at this point. Sadly, there's been a devolution of the working environment. Great, great people, mm-hmm. super competitive, especially post 9/11. But, you know, as people have started to realize that we have the cancers and the suicides and divorces and alcoholism and all the other things, you know, people aren't, like you said, wanting to go in these professions anymore. That's creating more of a void. That's creating more spaces that people are forced to work overtime. And now the hiring standard comes down. So the same way, what we've done is by not addressing the things that are broken in the first responder profession, we too are kind of driving away that 10%. Now, there's still a lot of good people in the fire service, but more of that 90% are coming in because they're like, we just come in. We need people. You know, you're out of high school. You got a heartbeat. Okay, come on in. And so with that, you find some great people by accident and you have some people that are liability that are going to cost that department a lot of money down the road. And this is what I'm starting to understand now. And, you know, I'm not the sharpest tool in the box. It's taken me to 51 to understand it. But all these cries, for example, financially of, oh, we need more tax money or, you know, fire department needs a greater budget. It's bullshit. It's the false economy of the way that you're working. Like you said, if you have, you know, 10% that are working, sorry, 10 people that are doing 50% of the work, and then you can figure out how another 20 people can do the other side because you're going to have the people that are the best workers. Now that's going to give you the same productivity as those 100. And so you search for those people that are, you know, are wanting to do the job, and then you pour your money into them and give them a healthy work week, fitness standards, you know, mental health counseling, and then you keep those people through the longevity of their career. That saves your country, your city, your county, you know, billions and billions of dollars.
People don't understand how easy it is to break things, how hard it is to build, because that's the problem too when you get rid of competent men. Is those are the ones who build things. And building things is hard. Destroying is easy. Those modern nihilists who want to see institutions go down, you only say that because you live in the US when the electricity is always on. Come to Brazil, try to get rid of structure, see what happens. Who do you think is going to save your ass? Right? So it's very easy to talk like that when you live in the US. Come live in a third world country, you'll change your mind about a bunch of stuff. But anyway. The problem is, and I'm going to use Pixar as an example. You know, Wall-E, Up, all those great movies, right? So You can see that from the beginning of Pixar till when it turned to shit, it's simple. There's one dude in charge. His name is John Lasseter. He's a massive nerd, and he likes to hug people, and he gets drunk a lot. But oh my Lord, and by the way, when he comes to work, he's a tyrant, which means he shows up, you better do your job correctly, otherwise you're going to hear about it. He's super nice, but not when it comes to that kind of stuff, right? And so he's someone who's worshipped, but not always liked in that sense. And that's the Me Too movement comes in, and they're going to use the fact that he hugs people. Ah, let's get rid of it. So they get rid of John Lasseter, they have a meeting to tell he's gone, and suddenly you have one woman raising her hand saying, can we please get a woman to run this place? Because that's the Me Too era. And so they put a woman in charge, and her the first thing she says, like, I'm here to make sure Pixar is 50-50. 50% men, 50% women. And that's all she's going to, that's where the incentives are going to be at. They get rid of all the older men responsible for animation. And now you got Pixar today, who just released a movie no one can watch because it turned to shit. Because you got rid of John Lasseter, then you got rid of his people, and then you got rid of that square root of people that do most of the good work. And now you end up with shit and you wonder what happened. We pour so much money in it. Pixar movies now cost more than when John Lasseter was making them. And yet they rack a fourth of the money, and they're losing money on each movie now because they're incapable of making anything of quality. Because no, it's not that easy. No volume will not solve the problem. No, putting more people on the project would not solve the problem. On the contrary, it makes the project worse because you actually need to favor the good, competent people. But once you start getting rid of competency first and then just to have some other idea of equality of outcome, that's what you get. But people will not understand that until start to go to shit, which is Hollywood. You'll notice some actors now are starting to complain. Yeah, because they're losing their lunch. That's why. Now that they don't have a job anymore, they start to complain. I'm like, how funny. How interesting. You didn't care about that 10 years ago when you told us to stay the fuck home and how dare you endanger everybody. It's funny how that works, right? while your people were out there trying to save people without people really paying attention whether we were helping them or not. No one cared. Nurses and first responders and everything, it's like, yeah. Let's just, I mean, how many were fired because of that vaccine mandate thing? Like how many refused and got fired? We don't talk about that either. Please bring up a massive lawsuit about all this and put Fauci in jail. I mean,
yeah. Well, it's interesting in my profession because there were definitely incidences where, you know, certain genders or ethnicities were not being hired when they, you know, they should have been, but it wasn't the demographic of the population. And so the knee jerk, as we always see, was, okay, let's just go and get, we need, you know, X amount of this type of person or that type of person. And what that does is, again, you in that group, you get some people that were probably phenomenal firefighters. And it was by chance that they were in that group and they, you know, an absolute asset to the department. And because you just scooped up a bunch of people of that particular type, you had a lot of people that weren't, that were a liability to the department. And that then, you know, you think about someone who was a better candidate, but they were the wrong gender or skin color, how that, you know, pissed them off. The answer is amazing, is the mentorship programs. There's one in my town when my friend Chris Hickman started, where you go to the underserved areas because there are groups of people that either, you know, in the past because of hiring practices weren't given a chance, or maybe just in their community they never even thought about being a firefighter because they hadn't seen themselves in some of the people that responded. So they reach out to them and they have centrally located training where they give these kids the training, the equipment, the scholarships for Fire Academy, but they set the bar high. And like, this is what it's you need to be a firefighter. So then you get phenomenal female firefighters, phenomenal black firefighters, gay, trans, whatever the quota is. But ultimately, it doesn't matter who they are and who they sleep with. It's can they do the job? And that is what's so beautiful and so easy about the system, is that you don't scoop up a bunch of people and say, we need you because of what you look like. We help mentor you if you're in a position where you weren't given the same opportunity and say, would you be right for this position? And that's the difference.
Yeah. And I live in Brazil now. You know how many conversations I have about race on a weekly basis? Zero. You know, everybody's mixed here. Black, white, like that. So you would think that'd be a topic of conversation. It never is. You know how often I talk about gay people here? Zero. Trans people, plenty of them in Brazil. Comes up once in a while because of the US, not really. Like, but yet I know people in my community, we all have jiu-jitsu together and everything. The only time we have a conversation, men, women, is because of jiu-jitsu. Because it's like, don't beat up the women, please, type of thing, because they're not as strong physically. That's it. That's about as far as that conversation goes. I don't care. And can we please stop caring and just look at who's the best for the job? And getting rid of not putting competence as a number one is a very dangerous game, because going back to those excellent firefighters, if they are treated the same as someone who's lazy, lousy, doesn't want to do your job and everything, they will leave. Why would you stay in a place where you're tolerated but not celebrated, right? Like, if I'm really good at what I do, I want to be seen as such. But if I'm treated exactly the same as the guy over there who doesn't give a shit, well, I do the extra work, I do the extra training and everything, no, I'm not staying. Like, the CJs of this world will not go back to fitness. That is a shame. And people will go, oh, it doesn't matter. It does matter, because sooner, like, there's no one to make sure the thing keeps moving forward and everything. We're losing CrossFit. CrossFit is dead. That's gone. The HYROX is going to take over. Who does HYROX? It's all the runners. It's those upper middle class people. They're going to run the stuff. So you're going to have basically HYROX is going to be women, skinny women that like to run for hours. Men are going to do jiu-jitsu, and then CrossFit is going to die off. And now we're going to be stuck with bodybuilding and biohackers selling peptides. We're going to be back to that. He used to sell steroids, now they sell peptide because it's so much better, right? And then Ozempic in order to lose weight instead of getting your ass to the gym. Is that where you guys want to be? That's what happens when you get rid of competent people. That's what scares me. And oh my Lord, do I want competent people as first responders?
Yeah, no, exactly. Or doctors.
Can we have a few like doctors, first responders, pilots come to mind?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, like, pilots.
That'd be nice, right? Like, that kind of worries me a little bit, I won't lie. Yeah. Absolutely. Like, it's stuff like that. Like, the engineers on the plane, I would like for them to be competent as well, please. You know, the stories about Boeing, where you go, how did that happen? It actually happens very easily. That's the problem. It's very hard to build. It's very easy for things to go to shit. You live in a third world country, you realize how easily the electricity could turn off, or the water, or the food, and how people would turn savages real fast. Like here, they stopped the pandemic because they knew if people got hungry, that was not going to go well. Like, no, they won't be at home waiting. No. Because here, people will starve to death fast because there's no structure like we have in the US or, you know, Europe or stuff like that. So here, if they were not working, they starve. And they're like, I'm not starving, which, as you can understand. So all those people that are, you know, with the hashtag stay the fuck home and everything, it's very easy to do that in your air-conditioned world and everything. But the rest of the world is a little bit rougher than that.
Absolutely. Speaking of competency, I just shared a video. And again, I don't know the backstory, but obviously it was a massive error. It was in Manchester. A double-decker bus, and the driver went under one of those kind of aqueducts where the canal goes over the road and sheared, you know, the top part of the bus. And there was passengers in there, like 14 people were hurt, one critically. And again, you know, was that, you know, overwork, you know, fatigue driver? I mean, how the hell? I don't even know how you go on that route. Or was it, again, lack of training, poor hiring standards?
How do you miss that? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But think about the human cost, but also the financial cost. You were trying to cut, you know, costs or whatever, you know, pay people worse, whatever the thing is. How many millions of dollars is that going to cost you now?
That's insane, though. Well, how come we hear so many of those stories, though? You can say whatever you want. If it's well, one or two, okay. But many is in on the rise. Like, we should be so scared of competence taking a dive. That should scare everybody. And the thing is, you know, it's the frog in the boiling water, right? You won't see it right away, but I live in a third world country. Lesser competence has very dire consequences. that I don't think people understand because they just got too soft. They don't see the everyday violence, the stuff and everything. But there's many situations here where make sure you're not the prey, or at least you cannot be seen as one. Because it can be just because you get charged $5 instead of two, you know, 20 instead of 10. That's one thing. But they look around, they see a certain, you know, me with my size, they go like, well, it's not worth the effort. I'm going to prey on someone else. Like, you better convey an idea of competence to make sure that things, at least to you and your family, do not go against you. And that's the real world we live in. You know what I mean? Like, do not be seen as a prey. And in the West, we are not seeing what the lack of competence can bring. Like, we started to sit on the business level on corporations like Disney and stuff like that, where you go like, how are you that incompetent at what you do? You can't make an anime movie anymore. Disney cannot make an anime. That should scare people. Because imagine the number of things that have to go wrong to get there. Turns out not that many, by the way, but you can get there very easily. But that should tell you something about that at least the society we are creating is going the wrong way. The response to COVID should tell you there's something profoundly wrong in the way we've been dealing with things for at least 10 years. Let's be honest, 20 to 30, but let's just say 10, 15 years. But that response to COVID should scare us. The fact that France accepted the 6-to-6 lockdown and everything that we hadn't seen since the Germans were in Paris, the fact that everybody went with that is insane. This is crazy. Yeah. Those are crazy times that don't scare people enough, at least, I think. And honestly, the fitness industry is going to wake up with the same problem.
Well, speaking of that, right. So with the peptides, I've found an application that's actually good for this community because a lot of the firefighters, you know, are woefully overworked, underslept. Yeah. And so what is happening here, and this is probably since we started talking, well, since we spoke last, is now all these men's clinics are popping up. And these young men, I mean, we're talking, you know, and women as well, that are in their, you know, late 20s, early 30s, are going to these clinics. And unlike the bad old days where the doctor would say your testosterone is 251, you're fine. Also wrong. Yeah. Now they're saying, oh, you know, you're still low. Because, I mean, it's insane how low these guys, you know, blood work is. It's just, and it's because of the sleep deprivation. They're saying, oh, we need to put you on TRT. Not peptides, TRT, without telling them all the side effects and the fact that they're going to be on it for the rest of their life because their little balls are going to shrink up to the size of walnuts. And so...
Yeah, or lifestyle changes first.
Yeah, but in at the moment, a lot of them can't because they're working 56 hours a week. Then they get told they can't go home because there were these overtime, you know, these vacancies because of this mismanagement. So some of them are working 80 hours a week, like every other week, some even more. So the peptide as a band-aid, as a temporary fix until, because we're working on shifting this work week, I found them beneficial because it at least makes your body make more of the testosterone on its own and you can come off.
I agree with you, but that's not, look, it's the same thing as Ozempic. It's the same conversation. Does Ozempic work? Yes. If you weigh 500 pounds, should you take Ozempic? If you most like, instead of dying, of eating yourself to death, most likely, because it's going to stop you from eating. But do you really think there's two problems with that? Is first, you're not changing the profound issue of you eating yourself to death. So you'll find another way to fuck yourself up. Don't worry. But that's not really the issue of Ozempic. Ozempic, the issue is going to be that 17-year-old girl over there who's on Ozempic to lose 10 pounds. First of all, she's going to look like a cadaver, but everybody's going to go, oh my God, you lost so much weight. Right, because you're not eating, right? And so now the second you stop presenting, you're going to be hungry, you're going to get more weight than you lost because you fucked up everything else anyway, right? And then now your blood sugar, like you have insulin problem, all of that. That's going to be the issue with Ozempic. Of course, it works for the 500 because you have a lot of trainers now saying Ozempic is great. It's great for 3 months to make your people lose weight, yes. But long term, it's a disaster on a societal level. Right, the peptide, the problem, of course, is going to help them now. But the problem is on a larger scale. Then they never have to change their nutrition. They're not going to have to, you know, start lifting regardless on how many hours they were. Like, that's the problem. And so, of course, for them, it's a massive help. But then the next ones and the next one. And when their work goes back to normal, they're going to stay on the peptide. They don't have to train as much. And then once every first responder does that, everybody else, even the guy who quits as a first responder is 26, he's going to stay on TRT or he's going to stay on peptide or whatever. And now he doesn't have to train as much. He doesn't have to eat as well. He doesn't have to have the lifestyle that he should have had without the peptide. You cannot replace nature with technology. I'm sorry. There's always a moment where that shit, there'll be another side effect. There'll be another problem. There'll be muscle density. There'll be bone issues. There'll be somewhere else. Your body will adapt to the peptide. Another problem will pop up. You can't. Ozempic for food is the same thing as going to someone who has a cocaine habit and gluing his nostrils shut and saying, problem is fixed. That's true. You cannot snort cocaine anymore. I don't think he fixes the problem.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to see. It's like, yeah, we might be well for 6 months, a year, by the way, which allows the people to keep working them to death and everything. So that's going to delay the response that is necessary as well. You see what I mean? Like, this is where we're going with those types of, that's what scares me with that.
Yeah. Well, the what I've literally did, because I went on peptides. It was funny. I had actually a pretty decent natural tea, but I was like, well, 14 years of shift work, you know, I there's probably a little deficit there. So I just did it for a short while and then came off it. And I was, you know, telling people that this is how any med should be, you know, blood pressure, yes, med, whatever. It's like, okay, this is a bolster until you get to a point and then you
but
come off.
You've done the work. Mm-hmm. That's different. You've done the work. You train, you've done the nutrition, you've done everything. I seriously doubt I'm going to find Ozempic people. Sorry, my camera is.
It's okay. Mine does the same thing. I don't know why it does.
Yeah. I'm sorry, but all the people that take Ozempic, like, those are the same people that had the body positivity stuff not so long ago. Now, remember, like, how dare you tell me to lose weight? I can't lose weight anyway. The second Ozempic is out, they will jump on it. Mm-hmm. The Oprah, all those actors, and everything, the hypocrisy of it is monstrous. My fear is that they start to, they do the same thing with the peptide. It's like, no, you're not doing the work. It's you, right? Like, most of those people do not need to go on Ozempic. Is Ozempic going to work? Yes. Is it going to go faster? Yes. Are there side effects? Yes. Do we know all of them? No. There are complications with all of that. You've done the work. If you do the work and your test is still at 250, yes, peptide and TRT and whatever the hell you need to do. But do the work. Then you add the cherry on top, right? Stop thinking there's a solution. There are no solutions, only trade-offs. Go do the work. And then you can take the TRT and the peptide and all that stuff. Yes, then they'll make you stronger, faster. Awesome, no problem. You don't compete in a drug-tested sport. Who cares? Do whatever you got to do. I mean, to be healthier and stuff like that. Understanding that there are no solutions, only trade-offs. I'm all for it. It cannot cut down on the work, though. And that's usually what I see. So you put 25-year-olds on TRT, they will never stop. Because you can't, if you start TRT at 25 lifting weights, you will never know how to lift weight properly. Because I got news for you, on TRT, the program is different than off TRT. The volume is greater. You can do shit you cannot do without it. So it is not the same programming. You will never learn to lift correctly. And so you will always rely on the TRT, usually larger and larger doses. And then you won't be just TRT. It'll be like that other compound and other stuff and then the other thing and then the peptides and then the thing and the thing. And before you know it, you're a drug addict.
Yeah. Because it's a very expensive habit.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's what it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the Ozempic. Yeah,
yes.
Which is crazy.
You're a dragon.
With the Ozempic, it's interesting because I've lost my wife's best friend and then one of my Fire Academy, you know, friends, yes, both died from gastric bypass surgery. So they're in those situations, and neither of them were actually even that obese. So this is what's so crazy that they even allow that in the first place. But like you said, for the morbidly obese, where they're really about to get heart disease and, you know, maybe lose a leg from diabetes, I think it absolutely has a place. And the TRT, you know, if you're a combat veteran with concussive injuries and your body simply won't make testosterone anymore, of course, TRT is a great application, but for this predatory element where they're targeting teens and 20-year-olds, especially with TRT, you know, without letting them know that your fertility, your hair loss, your, you know, your bitch tits, all these things that you're going to get, the back knee, you know, they're not being told this, and they're not being told that first, change your nutrition, start a lifting program, get outside. How are your relationships? Are you meditating?
You will not stay at TRT level. That's not true. Let's be honest. If at 25 you're at TRT level, you know where you are at 35. Not at the same level. I can guarantee you that. And I can tell you something. When you get to 40 TRT, testosterone is not the only thing you're taking.
Yep.
Because you open that door. And by the way, but that's my same problem with Ozempic. Instead of dying of a gastric bypass surgery, of course I want you to do Ozempic. But do you really think it is going to stop there? Because now, remember, you can't eat on Ozempic. Right. So that hole that you were filling with food is coming back. What are you going to fill it with this time?
Yeah.
There's not food. You'll find something. So you want to bet that the rise of addiction is going to go up amongst people with Ozempic?
Yeah.
Of course it will.
Yeah.
Come on. If it's not alcoholism, it's drugs. Choose one.
Yeah, because it was already an addiction. Addiction was food.
You don't get pleasure from food anymore.
Yeah.
An obese person that cannot get pleasure from food anymore. Anybody think this is a good idea?
No.
You're going to kill them with something else, man. It's obvious. Except in the meantime, you put an entire generation of 15-year-olds on a new form of anorexia.
Yeah, which is also what we saw in the same, you know, era as bodybuilding. We've gone full circle, literally.
That was a great thing with CrossFit. It made them beautiful and fit, but you had to train performance, right? So you had to eat, because otherwise you couldn't perform.
Yeah.
And now CrossFit is dying. The girls got about 20 pounds heavier. I mean, like the carb stuff, like we're back to food eating, like we're back to weird relationship with food. We just, man, that lasted 10 years. We got a break for 10 years. That's it. Now we're back to all that bullshit. I'm like, oh, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my wife's into all those TikToks where she watches other people eat in their car and make all the slurping and snapping noises. And, you know, there's always fast food. It's always shit food. And I'm like, this is a bad sign. If that's entertainment now, watching someone eat shit food, there's your sign, as they say.
Yeah, like, we're going to have to understand what getting rid of competence is doing to us.
Yeah. Have you ever seen that film, Idiocracy?
Yeah.
Yeah. We're basically living it now. Yeah.
The problem is, like, the only way you fix that is by bringing competency back, or at least the incentive toward competent people. It's not as simple as it sounds, because you're going to have to attract them in your place of business and such. It's not simple. I mean, like, that's why I basically went dark me on my side, because I was like, I can see the biohackers coming into what I do, and I'm like, I'm not doing this. That bullshit 6 weeks, like, nicotine patch now for X and Y and Z. I'm like, oh, people, come on, 6 weeks? You think you're going to help with autism and anxiety for 6 weeks? Like, they're just selling you something. Are you not? This is snake oil. Like, come on. The biohackers, man, this has to stop. Stop with the six-week stuff. No, this will not solve the problem. The problem is you're not doing what you need to do. It's you. That's it.
Yeah.
Stop with the self-indulgence. You'll lose 20 pounds.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of fitness journeys, again, it's been, you know, 3+ years since we talked. To this day, when I coach, as you know, when I teach my free class to first responders, it's still your work. It's still the sandbags, the sleds, you know, the yokes, all the things, or your original work, should I say. Yeah. So what has been the evolution from that side now in the last 3 years?
I came back even closer to the original stuff, and I cut everything else. So I've cut all assistants' work, and I went back to pretty much what you did that day. And this is 99% of the work. And I stopped the assistants' work. I stopped everything else because, first of all, I got tired of people asking about emotional mapping without understanding a sandbag squat. And by the way, that's my fault. I should have kept my big mouth shut. that day instead of talking about all that shit, because they all jumped on it, because the idea of them being able to change how they feel instead of doing something about it was the worst idea I've ever had, by far. So what I went is I went back to the original stuff. And you know what the best proof of all this has been? Is my wife doing jujitsu. She's a monster. And she was going to be a monster because that's just the type of people she is, what the genetics are strong with that one. But the force is strong in that one. When she trained in jiu-jitsu, all the dudes were basically at the school. It's a very famous school where I'm at. And they were like, careful, like you're sparring a man. That's not true, but you're sparring a 15-year-old man, boy, strength-wise. She has a strength of a 15, 16-year-old boy, which is crazy for a woman. You spar with her and you go, ooh, I can't just relax. I got to, and she'll bully you to death if you do. So, and that's the sandbags. That's the yokari. That's the strength work we've done with her. It translates to jujitsu so well, so well. On someone who's immensely gifted, don't get me wrong. But there was a proof to all that stuff, the sled, the sandbag and everything. The proof was in jujitsu. Whenever I went back, my strength on the mat was, I didn't move an inch. If anything, I got stronger from a grappling perspective. It was very, very, very cool to see that. I cut all assistance work because honestly, there's no need for it. You know what I've learned over all these years is you are built the way you are built and you're never going to change that. So the whole assistance work to get, I want bigger arms, I want bigger legs. I was like, well, does your body want bigger arms? Does your body want bigger legs or whatever? Because I can squat chicken legs. She squats, she has Brazilian legs. Yeah. I mean, it's not the squatting, it's you. In that case, it's me. I have chicken legs, but I got a really strong posterior chain. All right, well, and then at the end, the only thing that matters is like, is that what you're using when you lift heavy or when you grapple or whatever? Yeah, I use what I have, which means I had strong legs. I still squatted 550, so not good, but not bad either. But I still did it without legs. So, you know what I mean? Because I can't build legs. It's just, but I have a big back though. All right, so it didn't matter, right? If we both do sandbag squats, we're both gonna get different things out of it. But we'll both get strong in a way that we can apply. And when we do jujitsu, your jujitsu being different than mine, you will apply that strength your way the same way I will apply that strength my way. But we will both be strong. And so I was like, so I went back to all the original stuff, and that's all we do. And it works extremely well on you, not on me, on you, right? And the difference is when people say, I want X, I'm like, no. This is what you do, and you're going to get what you're going to get. And if you're not happy with that, go back in time, change your parents. Tell your mom to have sex with a stronger dude. How about that? Tell her to choose better. Go back in time, tell her to choose better. That's the difference, right? And so, but we're going to train with the basic stuff and you're going to get very good results based on who you are. And the reason that I love training, I don't train my wife because you don't train your spouse, but I love, you know, like guiding her in the on the journey, let's put it this way, is every single day I realize how unfair the whole thing is.
Yep.
There's nothing you can do about it, dude. You're just not as good as she is. I mean, it's like, yeah, it sucks. Yeah, you're not those people.
I think that's one of the biggest issues that I see. I mean, myself, you know, I've always been, you saw, like when I was there, I've actually put on like another 10 pounds or so since I've retired and are sleeping now. But but yeah, I mean, I walked out 6 foot and 168. That was my whole career doing CrossFit, you know, pre-CrossFit, all that. Yeah. That never changed. And, you know, you get guys that come in and they're, you know, mesomorphs or, you know, whatever type. And you know, 6 months in, they're slinging around weight way faster than you, you know, and doing muscle ups. And it's like, again, it was frustrating. But it, just like you said, there's pros and cons. In jiu-jitsu, you know, I've got little daddy long legs, spider legs that can, you know, wrap around and have a huge base. But am I going to, you know, play a pressure game very well? No, of course not. I'm like a little stick insect. So yeah, but I think that's it. There's a lot of shaming, you know, even in gyms, like, oh, you're not as big as me. You're not as strong as me. And it's like being truly grounded where you're like, I'm okay with who I am. And you know, I want to be as strong as James Gearing can be, you know, within reason. I'm not going to focus all my time on strength, but looking at other people.
Yeah, but look, I've been 240, between 230 and 240 my, I don't know, the last 20 years, I think. Right? I got stronger, but I didn't get bigger, right? And you go like, oh, but you're big and everything. I'm like, I'm not, because I was competing with strong men, people that were, a friend of mine was 6'6", 350, and I have a picture of him next to Thor, and he looks like a kid.
I've stood next to Thor, and I look like an infant.
Oh, my Lord. People don't understand how big that man is.
He's huge.
Right. So those that were my friends, right? And so I was like, you guys don't understand, I'm a shrimp. And even the weights I lift is fucking so light. So I was all proud of, you know, my 900-pound yoke carry for 100 feet. But, right, it's still a warm-up for those fuckers. By the way, twice my weight, literally. I walk around 235. The dude over there is 465. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. So how are you going to change that? Well, you're not. I got news for you. There's no amount of steroids you can take that's going to change that. That shit is just, you know that. But I was good as a 230. All right. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's relative, man. Yes, you're 170, but you're not 135. I got plenty of those at the gym. These Brazilian men are not big. I got a bunch of 140s at the gym, and they're not bad at jiu-jitsu, let me tell you.
Yeah.
But then they can move all day. Their endurance is insane. And they have like that, you know, like that little man motor, like, I need to prove something, which means they train 6 hours a day. You know what I mean? Then they go to work and they come back. You know what I mean? Like, you go like, oh my Lord, you're completely insane. Well, me, I'm more like chill, relaxed. Of course I'm chill and relaxed. I'm 235. What would I not be chill and relaxed? I don't have anything to prove. You know what I mean? But when Haftor comes around, makes me lift a little bit heavier. So yeah. it ain't fair, sister. You know what I mean? Like, you do what you got to do. But at some point, look in the mirror. It's like, where can I get better? So me, I know I have my exercises. Like, as long as the sandbag carry stays up, my yoke carry, I got a bunch of stuff. If that stays up, I'm strong. I can still do well at jiu-jitsu. There you go. So what I've learned, honestly, me, is just I cut out all the other shit. It's honestly like, can you give me 3 good training sessions a week? Good. Some people will train twice a week and become world champions. Others will have to train 12 times a week. You don't get to choose either. I need to recover. I can only do so many training sessions. After that, I just don't do well. I'm a neural output guy, which means it's how hard I hit when I hit. Janina is more like a volume person. She needs to train a lot. Okay, there's no good or bad in this. It's just the way you're built. I am built as a neural output guy, which means put me under a heavy weight that wants to crush me. And if I have to make it at that line over there, I will make it. Because mentally, I'll be like, I'm not letting go. And there's that voice that tells me not. And then I'm like, I'm going there. I have that. But she have that volume when she can just fucking train twice a day, 3 times a day for 3 weeks and go, I don't care. I can't do that. I don't have it. I don't have that. But I have the thing when it gets heavy. You know what I mean? Like, all right, whatever that is, you need to find that, which one is yours. And then you capitalize on that, because the other stuff, I got news for you, it's not yours. Like, I won't look like Arnold. God knows I've been trying since I'm like 14 years old or whatever. So was it Terminator or Conan, the first one? It's probably Terminator. I was like, I don't care what he does, I need to look like that type of thing. And there's only one. I was not born to be a professional bodybuilder, but I'm strong as shit and I'm good at grappling. All right, well, that's what you do. So save yourself a lot of heartache and just find that. And so I cut down all assistance work because I'm not a muscle capacity guy. So it's useless for me anyway. I just get tired. So instead, I have my exercises that I can do well, you know, with a sandbag and stuff. And I just spend my energy on that. And the return on investment is much, much higher. Cut the bullshit, cut the ego, look in the mirror, see what you're good at. There's something you're good at.
Yeah.
There's something you can be good at, right? Something that has a highest return on investment for you. Go do that. And unfortunately, you might not be the guy you wanted to be. All right. That doesn't mean you're nobody. You are someone. Just go find out who that is. He might not be the guy you chose. I chose Arnold. Well, turns out that's not me.
Yeah. I see it as train tracks. You know, you can be in a station with multiple tracks. And it, you know, it's great that you want to be ahead of that other person, but you're on a different set of rails. you never can be on those other rails. You know what I mean? So way I look at it, if you look at early CrossFit, when I used to train from the main site, back then it was awesome because I'd find a guy named Sven in Sweden who was 6 foot tall and roughly my age and roughly my my weight and be like, okay. But it wasn't I was trying to beat Sven. You were using each other a barometer, like, how are we doing? You know, how am I doing on my only journey? And then when the games kind of took off and it became competitive, now everyone in the gym is trying to, air quotes, beat each other in the WOD. That's when I think you saw the form start to diminish. And then, and like you said, it was almost discouraging because, oh, I never beat Steve. He always crushes me. Instead of going, I'm better than I was a week ago. That's amazing. You know, and those two things get blurred.
Sven was amazing because Sven beat you at certain stuff, but you beat Sven at other stuff.
Yeah.
So now you understand how life works. You go, ah, but I can beat him here. Oh, but he's good there. So let me catch up a bit here. Hey, I'm within 90% of Sven. I did good because, you know, you beat him on that and then he's doing the same. And now, like, you know, like how hating that guy gives you so much gains. I love to hate people. Like, those, my friends are the people I hate because they're the one who make me do better. I mean, so there's always that one guy you hate more than anybody else. That's your best friend right there. You need to hate that guy, right? But it's you hate him because on certain things he's better, others you are, and then you go back and forth. And that's how the thing moves. When we started to go like, I need to be that dude, then you're screwed. It's like saying, I'm going to be the greatest sprinter that ever walked the earth, right? You know, chances are no. That place was taken. I ain't going to be me, unfortunately. And it's funny because if I say that about basketball, I want to play in the NBA tomorrow. Sprinting. Right, I want to be a little, everybody will laugh. But whenever it comes to gym stuff, everybody was like, oh, yeah, you just have to work hard. Bodybuilding, strongman, oh, you just have to work hard. No. Jadina deadlifts 440 for a reason. She's fucking strong. I mean, and she'll get to 500 because she's that strong. Yeah, it's not fair. But you're not her either. You know what I mean? Like, but it's the idea, like, work hard and everything in the gym. It's the same thing as working hard on sprinting. Are you going to get better? Yes. That's it. You're going to get better. That's the only thing I can guarantee you is that.
Yeah.
But how far you take it, who the fuck knows? I don't know either, by the way. I just know that within 2 years, you don't make it at national level, you'll never be a world champion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you watch some of these races with the real champions, you know, and they just get smoke the rest of the course. So you see even these elite sprinters, for example, that would crush you any day of the week. These high level people come and it's just another gene pool completely, because, you know, they all train their ass off.
It's another gear you didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. Like, honestly, the rule is simple. Is a world champion will get to a national level in 2 years cruising, not training, just fucking around, and within 2 years is national level, and you go, what just happened? I've been here for 12 years working my ass off, and then 3 years later is 4 years later is top 20 in the world, and now the work starts, because the next 5 years is going to go from the 15th spot to the fifth. That's 5 years right there, and the other 3 years is to get from fifth to third. That's the problem. Is the work starts once they get to top 20 in the world. And now you have that top two that is just built different from those guys.
Yeah.
That you just don't touch. Yeah. Then you get Bolt and you go like, yeah, well, no. It's one, you get that one in a generation. And you go, yeah. Not to say they didn't work hard on any of that stuff. You just, like, you don't understand how past humans some humans are. The Haftor, those people, they're just like, nah, man, they're just built different.
Mm-hmm.
It's built different. And so, like, we know that on specific sports, but I just find it so funny when it comes to the fitness industry that just work harder, you get the six-pack, you get the glutes, you get the pecs and everything. It's like, nah, dude, that game is not for you. Those girls on Instagram, there's very few, and usually they're on drugs, and then it's a good lighting, and it's 6 weeks just to take that one video, and you don't understand what comes to that and everything. It's like there's a web of lies in the fitness industry that is becoming, that was never good, but with Instagram, it's getting worse.
Well, I think it's discouraging a lot of people. I mean, you think about COVID, what really made me sad was there were a group of people that were in gyms that had really taken a long time to find the courage to walk through the door for the first time. And then they were carried away and they were doing really well. And then that hard stop hit. And then, you know, a lot of them we didn't see again. It was very sad. The same thing, I think, with the social media thing is, you know, all you see is not only people's Instagram highlights, but you're also seeing some of the fittest, strongest, fastest in the world as well. And so, you know, some of these people look at it and go, well, I could never get to that level. And this is, it's so sad because no one's asking you to get to that level. But if you can get rid of the extra 20 pounds that you're carrying around and play with your kids or stop your back hurting, that is a huge, huge leap forward. But you've got this elitism. And like you said, a lot of it is fake. How many bodybuilders on Instagram are dead now because they lean down to nothing and have arrhythmias and strokes and all that? You know, so it's such a dangerous kind of wave in the so-called fitness industry because it's nothing to do with fitness. It's narcissism is what it actually is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, 100%. Has nothing to do with fitness. And what kills me is those people during COVID that gained 25 pounds, they'll never go back to the gym because it was so hard in the first place. And it's twice as hard to come back as it was to get there in the first place. You lost the weight, you get it back. Oh, it's a bitch to go back to the gym after that. And everybody looks at you and then they all know. And oh, my Lord. And so we will not see those people ever again. And it's not like we're winning that war already, right, of the obesity and all of that. So then it's just more people toward Ozempic, which scares me so much. Because then there's less need of a gym. And then again, like we're losing the CJs, right, in the fitness industry. But sooner or later, we're going to start losing the gyms as well. Because, you know, like, and by the way, Instagram is not helping gyms. Like, you know, with all the, like you see, men are going less and less to gyms now because of all the problems we have associated with videos in the gym. And then, you know, like the TikTok problem and then the OnlyFans problem and all that stuff. You have less and less men in gyms. So now we're going to bankrupt that industry. And then what?
Yeah.
Like it's that. Those are the things that I see around and I'm like, fellas, we need to do something about it. And CrossFit was really gave us like a new jolt of energy toward that. But then COVID took care of that too.
Yeah. Yeah.
And now that we got rid of Greg Glassman, you know, CrossFit is dying. And so where do we go? People like you or me, where do we go? I mean,
yeah.
So I train at home.
The gym that I train at, that we were trying to get you to years ago, you know, if you ever came to Central Florida, I got to give massive props. I mean, when the COVID thing happened, we did everything that they said initially, you know, they closed, they genuinely did. And then we transitioned to outside 6 feet apart. And then, you know, you realize, well, wait a second, lifting platforms are 6 feet apart anyway. So CrossFit has always been 6 feet apart. So then they went back in, but they've actually switched to Wolf Brigade programming now. Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah. So Greg,
go ahead.
So Greg's programming, he was a former CrossFit guy as well, but he kind of like yourself, kind of leaned a lot more into, you know, the heavier side, sandbags, you know, unilateral kettlebell movements, a lot of mace work. And we've shifted to that. And at first there was this big kind of knee jerk startle reflex from the, you know, diehard CrossFitters because, you know, you're not flogging yourself to death every class. And there are Metcons, don't get me wrong, but it's more kind of leaning towards, you know, what you do as well. And that has been amazing because we have kept those kind of people in the gym and it's packed now, absolutely packed. And you got to be careful because you get decapitated by a mace if you walk through the gym these days.
Yeah, no, 100%. But that's, I love to know good people do well, are doing well. But that's what we're going to see. We're going to see fewer and fewer of those places. So at least they'll be packed. So from a business perspective, it's good. But I don't know, maybe we'll clear up people that should not have been there. But we'll see what happens in the long run. I am a little bit worried about the direction of what we do because of, I'm afraid of that we're going to start to lack a sufficient number of competent people. I'm happy that you don't because you have a good guy in him and everything. And there's still plenty of them. I just hope it keeps going that route. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so so far the wrong way when it comes to what's needed in this country. Because as we talked about post-COVID, we have 70% of the nation that's obese or overweight, and we're crying out for all these things, you know, socially, whether it's better, you know, schools and PE programs and the arts and all these other areas. And they're like, oh, we're going to have more taxes. It's like, well, no. I mean, the NHS, perfect example, in the UK, before it got sliced and diced by privatization, the idea was, if you have a tax-based healthcare system, the ultimate push is to make British people healthy. So we use the NHS as little as possible. You have a profit-based healthcare system like the US, the push is to make people sick. So now you have this COVID where, you know, drug companies make billions, and then all of a sudden, magically, gyms are starting to be demonized and closed down. You know, and now pills are replacing fitness, like you said, with TRT and Ozempic and everything. You know, it's the complete wrong direction. And I am a incurable yet angry optimist. I believe that we're about to see a renaissance. I think people are peeping behind the curtain now and realizing a lot of this corporate greed and power and everything from corporations to presidents.
I would agree with that. I'm just an action-based person. So I want to think, and I'm with you on that, by the way. I want to think in can, not cannot, always, right? It's like, don't tell me what I cannot do, just tell me what can be done. Yeah. What can be done, and then we'll try to do that. I just want to have a conversation toward, let's stop the bullshit, let's go back to our competence, and let's start doing stuff. Not just like, oh my lord, every 3 seconds and all that stuff. Like, feelings are great. Can we start doing stuff?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it affects national security. It affects, you know, the ability to recruit the right military members, the right first responders, police officers. And let's take police for a second, because sadly, there's a lot of, you know, videos of the wrong type of people in policing. Look at the mistakes that Breonna Taylor's, whoever it is, you know, when there is an error in law enforcement, Uvalde, children die, young women die, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. People die. You know, and then there's a huge, again, monetary value to that. Yeah. The most important thing is that you killed someone, but the budgetary side to that is horrendous too. So by shrinking the group that you can hire from, you're making the chances of you hiring the wrong person greater and greater and greater.
No, but that will get fixed, because I live in Brazil, and trust me, you do not want to live without cops.
Yeah, so no question.
They can talk all they want. That one, you're going to know right away. Defund the police, see what happens in Oakland. That shape will not last another 5 years. Because I lived in Florianópolis, which is the probably safest place outside of Dubai I've ever been to. But the cops here, they don't play. They come, you know, like drunk people or homeless or whatever on the island. You see them for a week and you don't see them anymore. They're not dead. They take them at night, put them into there, and then put them back on the mainland and everything. But they do it at night. No one sees it. But, and you know what? We all like, good job. Don't want them around my kids. Thank you.
Yeah.
And so, but I get, no one criticizes the police here, because they go, you want to deal with it yourself? Go ahead. And then that shuts people up real fast. So the defund the police and that insanity that is behind that, I'm not too worried about the US, because you cannot survive without cops for very long.
No, I honestly,
you can survive a lot longer without gyms. I can tell you that.
Yeah. That movement is already dead. The cop defund movement just died on its ass, you know, after a few years.
It's like firefighters. Like, look what happened in LA and everything. You get another two of those, they're going to go, okay, stop. Like, that's it. Like, how much money do you need? What do we do? Of course, people only learn through catastrophes and stuff, unfortunately. But the cops will be first. The firefighters will be second. I have no doubt of that. You cannot live without those. I know that from living in a third world country. My problem is the gyms are far, far, far down the line of all of that, which happens to be my world. So that worries me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, speaking of the strength training and jiu-jitsu, one of the things that I've always been told, and again, I'm not the power athlete. I am more of the motor kind of guy, which serves my profession very well. You know, I don't need a one rep. You need to be able to work for 10, 20, you know, 30 minutes, an hour, whatever it ends up being. But in jiu-jitsu, people kept saying about how strong I was. And that sounds so weird to me, because I'm in the gym and alongside, as we just talked about, people I'm comparing myself to, they're a lot stronger. But what I realized, it was the sandbag carry, especially the rope pull with the sled, that endurance with the, you know, the grip strength. And then like the Turkish get up, amazing. Someone's on side control, be able to just sit up and palm them off with this kind of weird look in their eyes. So talk to me about the application with that, because I don't know if we've talked about training and martial arts, especially jiu-jitsu specifically.
Right. Well, the main thing that you see, and that's what they all told me, is like, we see guys that are strong in the gym, but he does zero for jiu-jitsu because they are incapable of using it, because gym strength is concentric, mostly semi-centric, but it's a lot of, you know, moving at a specific speed and things like that, where you control and everything. None of that is applicable to jiu-jitsu because you're never in control. It's mostly you have to be very reactive and everything. But the greatest thing with the sandbag is that isometric strength it gives you. It gives you two things. First, the isometric, because you hold, and it gives you, you know, that rotation and all of that. And the second is that it builds a structure in a way that you can just apply pressure and take pressure in a way that others cannot. Like what I've seen with people that are very strong in the gym is you lay on side control, stuff like that. They can't breathe. They have none of that structural strength that me, I'm used to with a sandbag that is so rough, so mean, makes you ache everywhere at first. But it prepares you for jiu-jitsu because it's exactly the same type of strength. Sandbag carry and everything is wrestling. It's exactly the same stuff. It's farm work, basically. It gives you a toughness, the rotation, the isometric, the eccentric. It just gives you a capacity to handle difficult work in a way that your gym never will. So it's great to be strong in the gym and everything, but the fact is it's not always usable. Not like the sandbag, the rope pull is. You know what's funny about the rope pull is John Danaher, who's the head trainer, who trained Gordon Ryan, the greatest no-gi grappler of all time, and like that. His favorite exercise was the rope climb. Mm-hmm. For exactly the same reason we like the rope pull. So the difference is the rope pull is obviously you can change the variables much better, and then you're not gonna fall, and not everybody can do rope climbs anyway. So it was the same idea. Those are exercises that just apply themselves extremely well to grappling, for example, which is wrestling a bear, right? And the gym works just doesn't. So I always found that very interesting. There's nothing that mimics that will give you the grappling strength like a sandbag.
Yeah, I agree.
So, you know, it's been what, 12 years now? Oh, more than that, 2014? Right, so over 10 years doing this. And I go back to exactly the exercise I thought were the best starting the whole thing. Sandbags, rope pull, some heavy carries. This is where I'm back.
Yeah.
And carries over more than anything I've ever done. 10 years later, it's exactly the exercise I used at first. Exactly the same ones.
What about the nutrition side? I remember one of the most recent ones that we had was when you were really kind of diving into kind of carbohydrates in the morning, prior to working out, and then you were leaning into the proteins and vegetables in your evening meal. Is that something you're still sticking to?
Yeah. The only thing is when it comes to carbs, is I've switched to basically fruits and honey, and I've taken out the grains completely.
And what have you noticed from that?
It's a very, very different type of energy and a much better one, I got to tell you. I have this entire podcast we could do on propionate, which is a short-chain fatty acid coming from the high-fiber carbohydrate, stuff like that. There is a threshold to the amount of overall carbs you can have. There's a threshold of inflammation. There's a threshold when it comes to the nervous system and everything. And the grains, the problem with the grains, I mean, the rice, the bread, all of that, is that it gets you closer to the threshold in a very chronic way, where you don't necessarily feel, but you're very, very close to that. And you add something to it, like a sugar or whatever, and boom, inflammation, sympathetic response, and the whole stuff. I took out the grains because with the fruits and the honey, I know exactly where I'm at. The honey spikes me. If I abuse it, I stop for one day, and then I'm back to my normal. I cannot do that with the rice. If the rice takes me too far, then it's 2-3 days of being inflamed, aching everywhere, the mood, the thing. Relying on grain is dangerous, I would say. And no, you can still be big without grain. I'm 240 right now. So no, fruits and honey, but the same thing for my wife, we're fine with that. So we could do an entire podcast on that because I would like to go into proper, I don't have time right now, but we could go because we've been at it already, but we could go into propionate and what it means, and there are much deeper ideas behind all of that. But my overall, I would tell you, rely on honey more than you rely on grains, for example.
I'm going to be mindful of your time then and let you go. For people listening, because you said, you know, obviously some platforms have been shut down or shadow banned. Where are the best places to find your work, your videos now?
I'm only on Instagram now. Like, in it, honestly, it's mostly my wife posting her lifting. You know, I went dark. I might come back and do some the podcast again, because I've been thinking about it, because I got good people asking. I'm going to do an episode probably next week where I'm going to explain why I went dark, because it's been like 2 months now, at least, maybe more, not posting, and took out everything, took out all my podcast, took out everything. So I'll explain why I went dark and why I might come back. So right now you'll see mostly my wife on Instagram. You might see me back on YouTube here and there. The fitness industry is not the place I want to associate with right now, but the grappling scene is. So I might come back to YouTube, but like I want nothing to do with emotional mapping. I want nothing to do with all of that bullshit. All the people that say they talk for me, they don't. If you don't hear me from me, it's not strong fit. I want nothing to do with all that crowd, all the emotional mapping, all of that. People that are, you know, that took my work and made it do something I didn't want, to the side. So I'm going to do my stuff, but I will associate much more with, let's say, the martial art world than I will with the fitness world in that sense. But I might come back with a podcast and stuff like that, because I have some very cool stuff that we've been playing with all of that. And going back to the simple ideas of the beginning actually were probably the best ones. I can tell you, I should have shut the fuck up on a bunch of stuff. Yes, that is very true. And my earlier, simplest ideas were most likely the best ones.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's literally what I've been using this whole time, and they still work. Same with foundation training. I mean, I've swear by that. It helped fix my back, and both yours and that were kind of about the same time. Yeah. And, you know, the old stuff still works. So I would love to get you back on when you want to take a deep dive into the inflammation and the diet and all the other stuff too. But in the meantime, I know you got to go. So I want to thank you so, so much for being so generous with your time. And for the sixth time, coming on the Behind the Shield podcast.
Thanks, man.